Hello, and welcome to another episode of Andrew's Amazing Podcast. I'm your host, James Santana, and as always, I'm joined by Hunter Van Lero.
James is back. Back again.
We are brought to you by Andrew's Amazing Comics down in Saban, New York. Before we start, thank you, Hunter, for not burning my store down or ruining the show while I was away.
Maybe it was a little ruined.
Nah, it's been bad. It's funny, because, so as everyone knows, I got married 2 weeks ago, and last week I went on my honeymoon to Disney. And so, it's funny enough, we were on the plane ride Tuesday night we were at Magic Kingdom. So I opened my phone up to the Anchor app. I was like,
he saw me editing.
I'm like, oh, he's editing. Yeah. Oh, so we were at Epcot, we were drinking around the world. Mm. I was like, oh, he's editing. And then like in the morning, I got up to head to Galaxy's Edge. And I'm online at Galaxy's Edge. No, what were we online for? Was it Slinky Dog? Or was it for Avatar? Oh, for Avatar. We were online for the Flight of the Banshee. I went my phone out. I started listening to the podcast while I'm online. I'm like, we got fucking 3 hours to kill. I'll listen to the podcast. It wasn't bad.
Thank you.
That's really good, man.
I held out.
Yeah, you did a really good job. And shout out to
I was nervous without you, man.
Why?
Because I was like, am I going to fuck up the show? Nah. Am I the weak link?
Yo, when you were gone, I felt the same way. Like, I'm going to fuck this up.
Yeah, you did pretty good too, man. So at least we know that if one of us is gone, the show won't explode.
Yes.
We can keep it together for a week without each other.
It's the longest week of my life.
Oh, dude, it was. I worked so much. I have the other job, and then I worked so much here. I was like, oof. Thank God you came back when you did.
And, like, no one believed me. I was coming back. I was like, I'm coming back.
You know, Ann had to text you. You're coming back on Friday? And I was like, dude, yeah.
I called him. We were online for the shuttle. And he's like, don't call me, man. I'm like, you texted me. Yeah. I was just telling you I was coming back. You're on your honeymoon. Ignore this. I'm like, I wasn't going to ignore that. I have to let you know I'm coming back to work.
Yeah.
It was cool, though. He's like, he asked if my wife was upset that I came back to work. I'm like, no, we both planned out that I was coming back that Friday.
Yeah, and she still has her vacation, right?
Yeah, she was back. Yeah, she's still on vacation until Thursday.
Well, she gets a paid vacation because she's a big girl.
Yeah, because she's got that sweet, sweet, sweet job. Nah, I love my job, though. I would never trade my job for anything.
Oh, that sounds great.
Hell yeah. So let's jump into some news with some Bloodshot trailer stuff.
Vin Diesel, Bloodshot.
Yo, so...
Honestly, it just looks like a Vin Diesel movie, period. It doesn't look like a Bloodshot movie. It looks like a Vin Diesel movie.
It looks like
Riddick, but he's all white.
You sent me the link. I was getting ready for the day. And it's funny, I was like listening to it. I was thinking I was brushing my teeth or was coming out of the shower. And I'm listening to it. I'm like, yo, is this just Fast and Furious playing in the background?
It's from the producers of Fast and Furious.
Yeah, I'm like listening to the music. And I'm listening to like the lines. I'm like, yo, this is just Fast and Furious. But... it's got me kind of hyped. I do kind of want to see it.
It looks good. It looks crazy. It looks good, but I don't think it's... I like Jason David Frank as Bloodshot a lot more.
That's because...
With the Valiant Universe that they... I think it just looks better.
Right. I mean...
Vin Diesel's just kind of like, yeah.
I mean, he doesn't even look like Bloodshot yet, but that's fine with me.
Yeah, and Bloodshot's been bald before. That's not my complaint.
Yeah.
I just think Vin Diesel's too big. Bloodshot comes off as big, but not like huge.
Like he's very
Vin Diesel's like a fraction away from being the Rock. Size.
Yeah, he's very bulky.
He's got broad shoulders.
Yeah, he's very bulky. Honestly, I've read Bloodshot on and off.
Yeah, I've always been a fan, but never like.
Yeah, I've never sat and read it. Like sat and like read a full series. Actually, I'll probably talk to my one of my wife's cousins because he's super into Valiant. Actually, I'll probably see him here soon. But I definitely want to see what his reaction is to it because. He looks like Bloodshot. The movie looks kind of cool, but I don't know, because we're not mega fans of Bloodshot, are we going to get the same feeling that people got when Marvel started first putting out movies where it was like,
yeah,
comic fans were like, yeah, we love it because it's comic stuff, and then non-comic fans were like, oh, this is a good movie.
Yeah.
And then are we going to get that from now on?
I think it'll be a good movie, but I don't know if it's going to be like a, you know. Like how you said, like, oh, man, like, you gotta see this Bloodshot movie.
But
I'm gonna see it because I'm like, oh, yeah.
Sure. Yeah, I'm definitely gonna see it. It's funny because I do like, part of the trailer was, like, best-selling comic book.
Yeah, we had a conversation about it.
I immediately laughed. I was like, what error was this?
At some point in time, at least one issue had to be best-selling.
Because
a lot of movies will, like, false advertise. Well,
of course,
but, like,
of course.
Comic book movies usually try not to in the trailers. So I feel like this one... At some point, one of the books had to be the best-selling of the month.
Oh, hopefully.
I feel like it had. Maybe when they rebooted it for the Valiant stuff in, like, 2012.
I guess.
I can see it. Another trailer that came out this weekend
was...
Well, it actually came out yesterday. No. It was the Rise of the Skywalker final trailer.
Final trailer.
It came out after one of the football games. I don't know. Sports.
It was the Jets-Patriot game. Are you out of your mind?
There you go. Sure.
I'm a Patriots fan. That's why. I'm a New Yorker. That's a Patriots fan.
Dude, same.
I'm a huge Patriots fan. In fact, Ant hates on me all the time.
I'm only a Patriots fan because that was the first...
You're a bandwagoner?
When I was a kid, it was the first Super Bowl I watched, so I rooted for them, and they won. And I was nostalgia!
So you're a bandwagoner, got it.
I'm bandwagon when I was like 7 or whatever, dude. You can't get too mad at me.
I've been a Patriots fan since I was 7. I just liked the team. I liked them when they sucked. Anyway, back to non-sports related things.
Yeah, so Star Wars... So the first trailer was definitely a lot better than this one.
Mm-hmm.
This one just kind of gave us more details. It didn't give us any evil Rey, so I think that was just throwaway footage. It did give us really cool set pieces, like they're fighting on like a giant water planet, similar to like Kamino. Right. They're fighting on like a dam, and they're riding like wave boards in there. Looks really cool. You hear Luke's voice, you hear Palpatine. I think you can kind of see Palpatine in one of the scenes, but I don't want to speculate on that too much. We also see some more Knights of Ren. Kind of make their first kind of appearance. Like, we see one or two walk into frame.
Which is something that everyone's been teasing
for like 4 years.
Yeah.
We also see some Leia stuff. We see Rose is back. And she looks about the same. Doesn't look like she aged up. The other
I love how they're making Rose a thing.
I don't hate the character. She was definitely the weakest, besides DJ, in the last movie. So
that's fair.
But yeah, other than that, it's nothing really like write home about. Just like really cool visuals. On par with Star Wars. And it does look like a JJ movie. I don't know if he's actually doing it again, but it does look like a JJ movie.
Yes.
It's got like, doesn't have the lens flares, but it has like the atmosphere of like, this is JJ. The problem with the other movie was it didn't have a lot of like, I feel like the set pieces weren't as crazy.
Right.
Like, yeah, the mirror thing was cool. I mean, the end product was kind of lame, but like the idea of it was cool. And then the salt planet was really cool.
Yeah.
But like, they showed off like 8 set pieces in this new trailer, and I was like, wow, all these look better. So, and Kylo now goes by Supreme Leader Kylo Ren. He took over the Snoke.
The Snoke title, is dead.
Which is really cool.
Because Snoke is dead.
I feel like we'll get ramifications.
We are definitely going to. They have to, because it makes no sense that.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
We got no backstory for him. So I feel like he'll be tied to Palpatine or Sidious, whatever you want to call him.
He better be.
I want him to be loosely tied to him, not like crazy.
No, I if he's from Wild Space, I don't mind that. I care more about friggin' Rey's backstory than I do Snow's.
Oh, yeah, of course. Rey and Kylo. I need more Kylo backstory.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I know we have the most of that between the two, but, like, I do want to see more of a turn.
Oh, yeah.
The small turn we had was Luke saw the darkness in him and he tried to kill him, and Kylo was like, fuck that, and then he tried to kill him back. But I think that's kind of lame. I want more, you know?
Yeah.
I want to see if Luke was actually had, like, darkness in him, too. You know what I mean? Because we saw that in episode 6, where Luke just force chokes a pig and, like, uses mind tricks and shit to get what he wants.
Wait, what?
Episode 6. When he walks into Jabba's palace, he force chokes one of the guards and he uses the mind trick.
I'm thinking pig, and I'm like, immediately I was like, oh.
The Gamorrean guards.
Yeah, I'm thinking pig. I'm thinking actual pig.
Oh, you're thinking, like, a little squeal boy? Like,
yeah, I'm actually hungry. Leave me alone. I was like, pig. Yeah, I'm thinking, like, an actual pig. I'm like...
Yeah, so those were the trailers of the week. You watched episode 1 of Watchmen, correct?
Yes, I did.
I was not able to because I don't have TV, and I don't have HBO Go or Max or whatever it's
called.
You don't have TV? I don't have cable. We got rid of it because it costs extra money for us not to really use it. We mostly use streaming services now, like Hulu and stuff. We just didn't get the extensions for HBO yet.
Well, yeah.
I will watch it eventually, probably when it all comes out, but for right now. I saw that it got 1.5 million viewers on the first one.
And it's getting panned.
It's getting panned.
Yeah.
Did you like it though?
I loved it.
Give me some deets.
All right, cool.
Don't spoil it.
I will not. You know, but like, not spoil a cast deets. Episode for this, so I will not go into.
We'll spoil the cast when the whole show's out.
When the season's over. When the season's over, I'll definitely do a deep dive into.
Maybe you can get Mike again.
Oh my god, yeah.
If he's watching the show.
He definitely is, because I think he's using his sister's HBO Go, HBO Go stuff, because we live now that we live together.
Nice.
Oh, by the way, this is how we found out we had HBO. We're like, we had guests over, actually. Dumb being an adult, but we had guests over on Sunday, so I'm like, all right, cool, whatever. And I'm like, yo, Watchmen's on tonight. I'm like, yo, I hope the guy we have HBO. I said, she's like, what channel? I'm like, all right, 301. But I'm like, yes, you got HBO. 9 o'clock, we're watching Watchmen, everybody.
That's awesome.
All right, so.
Give me some deets, boy.
What's cool is that it opens up in 1921 in Tulsa. It's during the
Like that Minuteman stuff, right?
No, no. It's during... It's called the Black Wall Street Riot.
Oh, Massacre.
Yeah.
Yeah, I read about that. Continue.
And then it skips to 2019.
Big jump.
Yeah. Jarring. Without spoiling what happened in the Black Wall Street Massacre. Well,
the Massacre is actually like in a real historical event, but they added Watchmen stuff into it.
Probably. Yeah, well, what it is, there's a scene with a little boy. They try to escape. It's a little boy who has a note that says, please watch this boy, in his pocket. Because his parents, like, they're trying to get out.
Yeah.
Of Tulsa. And he gets, his parents, they get in an accident. And then him and his abandoned little baby, he carries his baby, and they're walking. And that's how the opening ends, and then jumps to 2019.
Damn, okay.
So you meet, you get to see kind of the first interaction between what is the 7th Cavalry. The guys in the Rorschach mask are called the 7th Cavalry. And you get to see the police that have, they all wear the yellow mask. It's supposed to, they allude to it. So what happened was apparently cops were getting found out. They were hunting out cops. People were, like, people from the 7th Cavalry and all these people. These terrorist organizations were hunting out cops. I'm not going to be super crazy. Regina King plays Sister Knight. There is, oh my god, I forgot his name from, and his name, he's from Miami Vice. I can't remember. There's a scene where he goes to the bathroom and does coke before like a thing, like before a kitchen meeting.
Sounds good.
He's a cop. He's the chief. But he doesn't wear a mask. And then you have Looking Glass, Red Scare, and I forgot the other two. Oh, Panda, the guy in a panda mask. And then I forgot the girl who pilots Archimedes, which Archimedes shows up, which is the owl ship, the name of the owl ship.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So they're going after the 7th Cavalry. So how it works is at the end of Watchmen, the actual book, it turns out that Ozymandias, the attack on New York, he's the one who sends that transdimensional squid monster into Manhattan and that kills all those people. So that's why now it rains squids every once in a while. So there's the ending. I won't spoil the ending. Jeremy Irons shows up in the show. There's like two. There's a weird thing. It says that Verdet is dead, which is Ozymandias. This is Adrian Verdet. This is his real name, Ozymandias. And Jeremy Irons isn't called Ozymandias yet. He's actually credited as the man on the estate. Because they haven't said he's Ozymandias.
He's still Adrian Voight, though, right?
We don't know. We know because of like real life stuff and them talking
he
about.
He could be lying.
But in the show, yeah.
It could be a throwaway, like he's not this, he's someone else.
But in the show, he hasn't even interacted with any other character yet.
He's just shown sitting there.
He's just in his estate and like he has a butler and a maid taking care of him. And he's celebrating.
How old is he?
He's older. He's a lot older. He's not like, getting taken care of. He's just. They're not taking
he
care
has
of him.
Them. But, okay,
yeah,
he has them. Like. How I
yeah, no, no, he's yeah, taking okay. care, no, no, he's taking care, like, he's getting taken care of from, like, these, this maid and butler, and he's writing a book called The Watchman, The Watchmaker's Son, which is Black Manhattan, but he hasn't done anything yet in the show, and he's celebrating his 2-year anniversary, which we don't know what that means, because it's not 2 years after the events of Watchmen, because Watchmen happened, at the end of Watchmen, Watchmen's 1985 when it ends, it's 2019 in the show.
Okay.
So we don't know.
All right, this is mysterious.
Yeah,
fun.
there's a big thing at the end that sets up the rest of it.
They got it. Yeah.
And apparently, Suspect is going to be on the show.
The original actress?
No,
they're way older. I forgot.
Yeah, they're way older. But it's gonna be Laurie, the second
Suspect.
Yeah, and
then what about Night Owl? Is he gonna be on the show?
We don't know. We don't know. But we know that the hand is gonna be in it.
Yeah. Well, I wonder if they'll bring back the comedian.
No, he's dead. Remember.
I know he's dead, but they brought him back in Doomsday.
That's
Clock.
Different, though. No, that's different.
You know, because he's like, I fell out of a building and I woke up and I was in the ocean.
Yeah.
And I was in the DC Universe. And I was like, okay.
Yes, no, sure. Yeah, don't. It's not going to be like that. It's going to be very close to what The Watchmen itself is. Yeah. The weird meta stuff that happens in it is because of things like Manhattan.
Yeah, could we get a flashback with that? I just want to see the comedian in a new outfit. I want to see like a revised 2019 looking comedian.
No, they're not getting you like even Silk Spectre showing up, but she's not a superhero. She's retired. Remember,
I just want to see the suits.
Yeah, it's not gonna be in it. They even said that he's probably not gonna be in it because he's dead. They're not gonna make any. The only reference that they make, the one cool Easter egg is that there's a blood splatter. The opening is cool, like the. Intro.
The title sequence.
Yeah, it's kind of. It's like DC, but when it flips a coin, and it turns into the button.
Oh, cool.
And the other one is there's a thing at the end with a blood stain badge. without spoiling the scene that sets it up, because that will spoil. Okay. It's a massive spoiler.
But that's like a comedian hint.
No, it has nothing to do with him. The blood thing is just a because it's the iconic for Watchmen. Robert Redford's the president in that universe.
That's great.
Yep, and he plays himself in the show.
Robert Redford plays himself.
Yeah, he plays the himself actor. The president. Yeah, the actor Robert Redford
is the president.
Is the president in that universe? So he just plays himself. He does Robert Redford as himself.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, he plays himself.
That's so cool. Mm-hmm. Oh man, I really gotta watch this. Mm-hmm.
One. Sorry, I love that review. Oh, by the way, definitely check it out. I give it 5 out of 5 so far.
Brian Michael Bendis to reveal Superman's identity.
Which we know. It wasn't like a...
He's revealing his identity in the main title, and then it's going to affect Action Comics, Lois Lane, Jimmy Olsen, and Batman Superman?
Yes. So...
And maybe...
Rest of DC Universe in general.
And maybe Legion, I think.
Not really, because remember...
Well, it's his book, though.
Yeah.
And I figured they might make one note of it, like, oh, John, I can't believe your dad said this in 20-whatever.
Yeah, no, okay. They would show up probably earlier in Legion, then. The big thing is that everyone thought it was going to be a fake-out.
Of course it's good. Of course everybody thinks it's going to be a fake-out.
Because it's based on the Superman Truth storyline they did in New 52.
Yeah.
Where he got his identity exposed in New 52. Mm-hmm. So everyone's kind of ragging on it. But it's...
I think Ben has posted, when I make something happen, it happens.
Well, they did do it in the New 52, but the problem was that they were able to recon it when they merged both pre- and current Superman together. The problem I have with Superman... It spins out, it's going to be a one-shot book called Superman Heroes that kind of shows the ramification, the immediate ramifications of what happens to his supporting cast.
Yeah.
And the DC Universe as in a whole, like in a shotgun blast, and then
I think
peter out.
I don't think Superman reveals his identity. I think Lois is going to do it, and then Superman's going to come out and say it.
No, he's
because because what we see from the Lois book and from the regular Superman books...
It can't be Lois doing it again, because that's literally the storyline from Truth. To the end, we'll tie into what will be with him telling his revealing it.
Yeah,
because like she's like, I have this here for you type of thing. You can go do this. You know, if they do like what Lois exposed it, I'm like, that's a complete ripoff of a literally another writer's story.
Well, that's
from
what he's
years
been
ago.
Teasing since his first.
But yeah, book, so. But I want to see what Bendis wants to do with it. I feel capable like he's going to take care of it very well.
Yeah, Bendis is a good writer. I don't see any problems with it. It's just weird because like you said, they did it recently, and then. I feel like they've done it. They do it all the time, every couple of years. They're like, he's going to get identity exposed.
Yeah, that's fine. It's not that crazy of a concept. Is that now it has to affect the DC Universe at large.
Yeah.
It does. It has to. Every book, including Justice League, Snyder.
Oh, yeah, Justice League, too.
They all have to be affected. Every book has to be affected. Mm-hmm. So we'll go on from that with some, now that we've done that, it's a weird segue.
I am Iron Man.
All right, so... Iron Man 2020, as we've been calling it since the get-go on the show.
We called it way... Actually, we were wrong, technically.
How?
The event that actually was coming out in December is actually Scourge. Annihilation Scourge.
Right, yeah, we were wrong about the
But we're not wrong event. About the Iron Man 2020 happening eventually. We just thought it was going to be a prelude.
Yeah.
But it's Iron Man 2020.
It's Iron Man 2020. So we talked about this 2 weeks ago, or last week.
We
2 weeks
about
ago.
It whenever they fully announced it.
Yeah.
I think it was 2 weeks
so
ago.
I'm going to run down through the list of the books coming out. It's called the Iron Man 2020 Checklist. These are all the books that are going to be part of the Iron Man 2020 event.
I hope so.
So your Iron Man 2020, your Forceworks 2020, which used to be, it was Iron Man's team / what became the West Coast Avengers.
Okay.
Machine Man 2020.
Yeah.
Which is also the book that Iron Man from Honor of 2020 Iron Man 2020 first appeared in.
I hope he wears his trench coat still.
Your Rescue 2020.
Yeah, Rescue. Bring it back.
You have Ironheart 2020.
Yeah, hopefully Luciano gets to keep being on the book. If
and then
not,
you,
I feel bad.
You have WeponX.exe 2020.
Yeah, it continues out of Weapon Plus.
Yes, it
and
does.
And Weapon Plus Absolute Carnage as well.
Yeah, I hope it's Weapon... I
Weapon
hope
Plus
it's,
Absolute Carnage next week.
I hope Weapon.exe is 2020 is not a tie into that stupid Marvel Presents book.
Oh, you mean that the Wolverine...
Yeah.
X-Men EXE?
Oh, because he was what? WeponX.exe?
I think so.
Yeah, he's Weapon X.
Let's hope it doesn't. Let's
hope
it's part of the Weapon Plus
I want
stuff.
The Weapon Plus stuff. Cause I don't want... It makes no sense to do a Wolverine miniseries set in 2020 if it's going to be that.
Yeah.
Cause it makes no sense. It's a different
universe.
I
think it's just a one-shot.
There's no... they haven't been any creative teams announced, really, for these series.
Except for Iron Man, which is...
Which is the regular... it's Slot, so...
Yeah.
It's the same team that's doing it now.
Yeah.
But,
I feel like Eve will still write Ironheart, but I don't think Luciano's going to be on.
No, it's not their minisuits. But so we don't know what these actually are. We don't know whether
They're minis.
And they're all numbered out already. They're all minis. One
through three or four.
Right? Two for most of them.
Ironheart and Rescue only are two. I thought there were three or four.
No, Ironheart's 2-issue miniseries. Weapon.exe is 2-issue miniseries. Forceworks is 3-issue miniseries. Rescue is a 1-shot. Yeah, Forceworks is a 3.
I feel like they'll spin Rescue out.
Depending on what these are.
Yeah, we could be wrong.
No, what I mean is...
We'll see them when we get to... when this list is coming out this weekend.
Yeah, what I mean is... Not what they are, technically. What I mean is... Not if they're miniseries or not, but what they mean to the whole point. What the 2020 thing means.
Yeah.
Because they can't be from the future. It really, 2020 is now.
2020 is like in a couple months.
Yeah, so they're not from alternate future.
I think they're just saying that just so you know it's under the same banner.
Right, that's it.
It's kind of like it was War of the Realms. It's Vatlas and War of the Realms Punisher. It was kind of like, it's just the banner.
Yeah.
Basically.
So that's some Iron Man news. Hunter, want to take us to some weird name changes? Speaking of weird name,
2020 name changes. Yeah, this is weird. So, Tommy Gun Wizards, it's a 4-issue mini, which we talked about on the show a while back.
Yeah.
Fantastic book.
Yeah.
So, issue 3 comes out tomorrow, and it still has the name Tommy Gun Wizards, but news broke that officially it's technically called Machine Gun Wizards, issue 3. It says Tommy Gun Wizards on it.
No, it's issue 3.
I know, but it says Tommy Gun Wizards, but they broke that it's supposed to be Machine Gun Wizards, but the name change doesn't go on to the until issue 4. So there wasn't a reason why. They haven't given one yet. They haven't released it to the press, at least.
That's weird.
But, because they were able to release both of them. So Dead Rabbits.
Right.
Or Dead Rabbit. That was originally the title for Dead Eyes, which came out a couple weeks ago. Yeah. And they changed their names because they got copyrighted because of there's a bar in Manhattan, and this book takes place in Manhattan. It's not the same story. Obviously, this guy's a murderer, the other one's a bar. But it's close.
No, it's because of things of... They got sued because of copyright infringement because it's the name of the bar's copyrighted.
Okay.
That's what it is. So the problem is you can't make money off that name.
Yeah.
So you can't, merchandise they wouldn't be able to put out. You can't do that.
Yeah.
You know, so that's why they sued them and won.
Yeah, because it makes sense. It's copyright infringement. So this book doesn't seem to have any copyright infringement.
No, I was just looking at it.
I think they're changing it because with the series ending at 4... I think there's potential for a second volume, maybe in a year or so, and they're going to continue the name Machine Gun Wizards, because right now this book takes place in, the Prohibition times, in the 1920s or whatever, with Al Capone and all these mafia members and magic.
Magic.
I think Machine Gun Wizards indicates that they're jumping to another point in time eventually. Maybe we'll see them current day in the wars for, Iraq or something, and they're using machine guns instead of Tommy guns. Yes, Tommy guns are, classified as, kind of machine guns, but changing it from Tommy Gun Wizards to Machine Gun Wizards just seems too...
Weird.
Weird.
Yeah, and only doing it for the
just
final
the last issue, technically, yeah. The reprints will have it, Machine Gun Wizard, but yeah, it's weird. I don't really get it, so I think my brain is speculating, it's another series next year or so. Because the world, I know it's, set up around, Prohibition rules with, instead of outlawing alcohol, it's magic. But, this world can expand further into the future unless the issue 4 cancels magic. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So I can see it continue to go. That's all I got on that.
So I'm rereading they added to the article.
Oh, they did? They updated it?
Yeah. So the new cover... It will be called Machine Gun Wizards, and the cover itself, they changed the art a little bit, so where...
It's got a board over
it. It has the board, that's going to be the cover. Mm-hmm. We don't know anything else, though, about it, that's really what it was.
Oh, it's Christian Ward and Sammy Cavella, sorry.
Yeah, and the cover, they released the cover, and it just has the boarded up thing on it. Mm-hmm. So it may, towards the end of the issue, fast forward to, World War One, because it's Prohibition. No, yeah, so it's Prohibition, you can lead right to World War II.
Yeah, so Machine Gun Wizards. Yeah,
the Machine
World
Gun, yeah. The Gatling Gun and the Machine Gun, yeah.
Fully Automatic Wizards. Could be the third series.
So going from that, we're going to jump into some Marvel news, where Marvel announces more podcasts.
Podcast medium.
For Series XM and Pandora. So you have four titles they have announced. Star-Lord, Black Widow, Hawkeye, and Wolverine.
Another one. different from The Long Trail and Long Night, because those are
next ones will have Gambit on it.
Those are just, we talked about it a while ago.
Yeah,
those are just regular. That's a regular podcast. That's not just on two media, not on two sites. SiriusXM and Pandora are only going to have those ones, while the Wolverine Marvel ones,
itself has there.
Yeah, but it's on Apple. It's on Spotify. It's on Stitcher. It's on all that stuff. So it's weird to see that this that these ones aren't. But I guess if you have a deal with it, you got to deal with it. Now, is it going to be set up the same way? Like, is it going to be serialized? Or is it going to be more like us just talking about... Like, is it going to be two people talking about the character and reading their books? Like,
no, it's going to be serialized.
I think it's going to be serialized.
It has to be.
I'd be down to see to do a Hawkeye one. That'd be fun. I'm probably going to listen to that one out of all of them. I love Star Wars.
I mean, I might. So, what it is... This is exactly what Marvel says what they're going to do. And Marvel's most sweeping podcast deal ever, the venture will include both scripted and unscripted series, themed live events, and more, and much more, premiering in 2020. SiriusXM and Pandora will debut many of Marvel's most popular popular podcasts before they can be heard anywhere else.
Oh, so they are coming to more places. Mm-hmm.
Including, there's more than those. For the four scripted series, each 10 episodes round, each are 10 episodes long, which will be Wolverine, Hawkeye, Black Widow, and Starfire, as well as four series.
Star-Lord, sorry.
As well as the fifth series that will in which all four will team up.
That's cool.
That's going to be the scripted series.
Star-Lord teaming up with these guys? Wow. Okay. This is going to be crazy. Maybe they'll all be in space. Ooh.
And they're going to do other like unscripted stuff, like talk show
now
stuff.
Now I want to do a Hawkeye book race in space. That sounds fun.
So yeah, now you know what it is. It's going to be like scripted shows, and then it's going to be, it's the four scripted shows, and then a fifth scripted show.
Yeah.
And then they're going to do other unscripted stuff too.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
I'm into that. Now I just really want a Hawkeye book in space.
Why?
Because it just seems fun. Doesn't put a guy with a bow and arrow in space.
I mean, I guess.
How crazy is that? All right, now time for the topic of the week.
All right, so we did this only because I was getting married.
We missed the deadline, James.
It's fine.
We missed it.
It's fine. We only missed a deadline because I was
getting... You had to go and get married, you selfish bastard.
And then took a week off to go on my honeymoon. So, we are doing a house... Hawks and Pox, House of X, Powers of X, wrap-up party. We'll go through this book in reading order. There is a chronological order to the book. We're not doing it that way.
Order is weird because Powers is four different timelines, so you have to read it in a weird... way.
They explain, there's a way to read it.
Yeah, well, you read all the year one stuff.
Yeah, you have to jump
through books. And then you read year zero, then you read year current, then you read 10 and million, and it's like, okay.
Yeah, so, we do it in reading order.
Reading order.
That was put in the book. So, we are going to start off with house number one, and then powers number one, and go from there. So, Hunter, start us off with house number one.
House of X number one.
Written by.
All written by Jonathan Hickman.
They're all written by Jonathan Hickman. And,
the art is
for
by.
For you.
For me, is Pepe La Raza.
Yes. So, go ahead, Hunter.
House
what,
number one.
What is house.
It opens up with them wait, planting Krakoa.
Before that, what is
house. I missed the beginning. Hold
yes,
on.
I know.
I missed that part.
House and Powers were a bi weekly. They were both bi weekly. They were both bi weekly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Both bi-weekly series, six-issue mini-series that was going to lead up to the Dawn of X, which we started, technically, last week was the start of Dawn of X. So this is kind of a fresh run-through on those who didn't get a chance to read it. We're not going to do a full spoiler on this because it's still very new, so we'll jump on to the big highlights of each issue.
Yeah, we're talking about the highlights.
Though. Of each issue, and then we'll talk about some of the theories that we had and whether or not some of them came true, and then we'll jump into some Dawn of X stuff. So Hunter, go ahead.
All right. House of X number one. Opening. Professor X and his naked mutants in pods. Next page.
Oh, God.
So this kind of sets up everything that's going to happen for the next couple issues in a mysterious way, which doesn't get told until like House 5 or something.
Mm-hmm.
So then it goes to them all planting Krakoa plants in different locations. And then we get the council meeting of all the people with the Krakoa plant growing on the buildings. Magneto and Xavier are basically pitching their own as like United Nations. Like, hey, we're doing this. Just be prepared.
Yeah.
You can either let us do what we want, or you can try to fight us, but we'll win.
Right.
So, we get to see a really angry side of... Not angry, but a really pissed off... No. A really fed up. That's what we're looking for. A really fed up Professor X in this whole series.
Right.
He's not like a dick or anything to anybody, but he's not like his usual self.
Because
he knows... I mean, we have theories, but he knows we're not going to win.
Right.
He knows the only way for humans to like mutants is for us to just give no shits anymore.
Exactly.
They're not going to like us. We're not going to like them, but we'll live together the best we can. Because Professor X's original goals were always, let's be friends with everybody. Peace and love. Now he's like, fuck that, dude. Just peace. We don't need to love him. We just need to get along with him. So we see all the classic X-Men hanging out. We see Doug Locke. And we just see everybody having a good time. And then we get some of the... What are these things called? Not maps, obviously, but like...
They call it infographs.
The infographs. We see a lot of these infographs that throughout this entire series that give us background stuff like a map of the locations, some sinister readabouts that we get to later, some timeline stuff with Moira. We get a lot of this extra biz, which is really cool. We get stuff on the Orcus Protocol, which is the...
Villains for the book.
The villains, which is the people who are trying to make Master Mold and Mother Mold or whatever the giant robots near the sun are.
Mother Mold.
That's just about it for House 1.
Okay.
We do see some Wolverine, Sabretooth, Mystique, and Toad doing stuff. They fight the Fantastic Four. Cyclops intervenes. He goes, all right, we'll leave you to Emma. And then it jumps off into the finale of the conference that Professor X called. And they basically go, we're doing Krakoa. Bye. And that's the end of House 1.
There's a reason why they're going to meet them. And they're trying to sell drugs.
Well, they're not selling the drugs. They're pitching the drugs to these big companies.
Yes.
Okay, yeah. It wasn't the United Nations. That's later on. They're trying to pitch these drugs that cures literally everything. But they're pitching it as, since you guys don't like us, we're not giving you this for free. We're giving you this for a price.
Yes.
Which I think is ruthless.
And that's...
And I dig it.
Why Xavier's not Xavier.
Theories we'll get to at the end of the wrap-up.
Yes. Calm yourself. And we jump into...
Powers of X,
also known as Powers of 10. Written by Jonathan Hickman and by R.B. Sylvia. So it opens up is going to be the breakdown of the four stages of X-Men of the year of X. Excuse me. You have X-Zero, which is the X-Men Year One, the Dream. X-One, the X-Men Year 10, the World. X-Two, the X-Men the Year 100, the War, and then X-Three, the X-Men Year 1000, the Ascension. It opens up with a very young Xavier meeting Moira McTaggart for the first time.
I wouldn't even say he's very young.
I mean, it's a younger Xavier.
Yeah, it's not current day Xavier.
Yeah.
It's not Phantom X body Xavier.
No. So he's meeting Moira McTaggart for the first time, and she shows him, she talks about three cards, the Magician, the Tower, and the Devil. And they talk about what it means to have a dream. And then she says that she knows him, he doesn't believe her, and she's like, read my mind. And then shit pops off. And then we jump to the present day, falling out, direct fallout from the last issue, from House 1. We explain what the Xavier and Magneto and Mystique was trying to capture. And then we jump to the far future.
The far distant future of X-Men.
Where Sentinels are fighting what we think are X-Men, but they're little things called Chimeras. One of them is called Cardinal. He's the one that looks like Nightcrawler. And we meet Rasputin 4, which is the one, they were the two prominent ones on the covers.
Yeah. I love Rasputin, dude. She's fun.
Yep. And they're fighting it. They are called the Sinister Line. They are Chimera. Thank you, John Hickman, for his lovely infographs. He explains what Chimeras are.
Thank you for all the Sinister love.
Oh, I love it.
He made Sinister popular. Yo.
I love me some Mr. Sinister all day.
Yeah.
And he explains what the Chimera Project is without breaking down it. And then we jump to Nimrod.
Yes.
I like Nimrod in this
version.
They
make Nimrod awesome. The original Nimrod, not only the original, but like one of the recent Nimrods, he's kind of lame. This one, he's kind of fun.
Oh, yeah, he's fun.
He's like, yay, I get to do the killing, yay.
He's very into his job.
Yeah, which is great.
And you also see Omega Sentinel, who is also in-house.
Yeah, Omega Sentinel's everywhere in this, which I like making her popular again.
Yes.
Because she's a fun one.
And then we jump to, they explain what the Hounds are, which was back, if you don't know what Hounds are, that's
Ahab's people.
Ahab, well, Rachel. Yeah. Was a hound from her
Rachel's
timeline.
Always a hound.
Yep. And then we see that there are X-Men in this far future, which include North, Zorn, Wolverine, and Krakoa, Cardinal, and Rasputin are the last mutants. They do a little thing and break down what happens to mutants, and we jump to the year 1000, where a character called Librarian and a little floating version of Nimrod are waiting the arrival of the Phalanx, and then two naked mystery people show up. Then we jump into House 2.
House 2 opens with Moira McTaggart. So this is where Moira gets really pop, like really mainstream, and not just like Professor X's girlfriend. So originally Moira wasn't a mutant, right?
Right.
She was just kind of like a liaison of sorts. And now she's this mutant who every time she dies, she gets reborn, but she remembers everything.
Is that this issue?
Yeah, it's right at the beginning.
Oh,
This is the start to the life of Moira McTaggart.
Oh, the life of Moira X.
Yes. So it shows Moira growing up, and then it shows her die. Then it shows her reborn, it shows her growing up, and it just keeps going with this Moira stuff. It shows you the meeting that you had with Professor X, where she, in this life, she meets him at school.
Yep.
So in her first life, she just marries like a dude in her town and then dies, comes back and goes, that's fucking weird. Then she hears about mutants from Professor X on TV one day. So then she goes to meet Professor X and he's doing a speech. Then she dies in a plane crash. Then she does it again and she becomes a scientist. And then one of them, she goes to school. One of them, she becomes like Apocalypse Acolyte. Like there's all this Moira stuff. I think there's like 10 lives for Moira.
We are now officially live number 10.
Yeah, so then it jumps to, I think this is Moira 3. Where Mystique and Destiny are torturing her, like, oh, you're just going to come back, but we're going to torture the shit out of you. We need to find out what happens in whatever knowledge you know.
Yeah, because she's a precog.
And then we get fucking Pyro coming back, shooting fire. My boy, original Pyro. Not Simon.
Relax.
Original Pyro.
Go back to where you...
We'll get to that. He's in this. I'm just
gushing
about Pyro. We'll get back to Pyro in another book later. My man. So it just keeps going with a lot of the Moira stuff. She explains the X-Men. She explains what she's done. One of them, she was like an international assassin, basically Black Widow. And one of them, she like destroys the Sentinels. This is just all Moira all the time. Basically this entire thing. And then, like I said, it ends with the meeting of her Professor X reading her mind and seeing how many lives she's lived.
Yes.
That's the end. And then it gives us the infographic of all of her lives and what she's done.
There's three things that are weird with that infographic. One, Life 6 is missing.
You are correct.
And then...
So is Life...
No, Life 6 is blank, but then if you look at the bottom, Life 9 and 10 are the ones we know.
Yeah, they're continuing.
Yeah, they were continuing on. So, the thing about Moira is that she explains, in each life, she's trying to do something different. So her first life, she doesn't notice that she has this ability, she just lives a life and dies.
Yeah, she lives life.
The second one, she just tries to, she tries to
understand her mutant powers, travels, gets killed in the book.
The other one is where she meets Xavier, finally. Then the other one where she meets, she decides to, she lives the life of Xavier, but Xavier is killed. Then she spends her life, her as assassin, is hunting down the Trask family.
Mm-hmm.
And there's more and more and more. Yeah. But all it is just to make sure that humans the rise of the machine doesn't happen. Because they realize that Sentinels have been killing humans and to stop the mutant extinctions. So then with that, we'll jump to Powers 2. Powers 2 jumps back to the meeting, shortly after the meeting with Xavier and Moira, where they go visit Magneto, and they explain everything to Magneto about what's been going on for all the years, and how the three of them should team up.
And then that's why Magneto's a good guy in House 1.
Yes, and then we jump back to present time X-Men, where they find out about the Orcus Project, their Hunter reference from Issue 1, about the thing called Mother Mold, and they talk about Nimrod. Then we jump again into the future, where Apocalypse is revealed to be the leader of the X-Men.
Yeah, buddy.
And
Apocalypse
his,
love.
And hit their final strike against Nimrod. We get to see then who the actual X-Men are. They were just trying to find a back door into Nimrod to be able to take down Nimrod. And then we jump again to the farther future, year 1000. With the coming of the Phalanx and them trying to, the humans and machines combining. And then we jump out of that. That was the final, it just ends with the computers coming to rise against humans. Then we're into, go right to Powers 3.
Mm-hmm.
That was the weird, reading order.
Mm-hmm. That's where it jumps to.
Yep, Powers 3 then opens up, continuing exactly on with the ascension of a human becoming a machine and the last stand of the last X-Men. Last X-Men are Apocalypse with his horsemen, War, who's Wolverine, Death, who's Zorn, Pestilence, who's North, is a mix between Laura Dane and Emma Frost, who's a second-generation Chimera, and Famine, which is Krakoa and Cypher, finally symbolically merged. Then you had the other side with Mother and her X-Men, which is Cobol, who the black brain mutant who got killed in Powers 1, Rasputin, Cardinal, Percival, who got killed, who's a pure-blood mutant, who I guess will eventually come back.
Let's hope.
Let's hope. Led by Akaba, who we don't know who that is yet, without spoiling who Akaba is.
I honestly forget.
And it's just The Last Stand, which we knew was coming. And then there's a big twist. I won't spoil the twist at the end of what's going on. But then we get to finally meet Akaba, who is killed by Wolverine. And this kind of explains a missing part of a timeline. One of the timelines is actually revealed in this one. And then from there, with the death of Akaba and killed by Wolverine, we end, which is halfway part of Powers. And we jump into House 3, right?
House number 3 with Cyclops. Cyclops gets a lot of love in this. They make him a main character again. I know he was kind of the main character of the Uncanny X-Men around issue 11 or so. And then he continued on to Rosenberg's because of Extermination. But it's cool to see Cyclops take a leader role again after being dead and kind of a dick in Uncanny X-Men for the first, 6 years. So we see Cyclops and a team of Monet, Mystique, Jean Grey, Wolverine, Archangel. Did I say Archangel? And Husk. So they're going on their mission to stop Orcus from happening. We get some courtroom stuff with Sabretooth, and they're trying him for killing people. And then Emma Frost walks in with two of the Cuckoos.
Cuckoos.
And they go, "Wolf, Sabretooth is protected under mutant law, and he's going to be tried in our court, K-bye." And they basically just take him away. It's great. Then we jump back to the Mother Mold ship, where Omega Sentinel is talking to Dr. Gregor. She's like the head of the
Orcs project.
The project. Yeah, so it's a bunch of these people. And Nightcrawler's there too. Forgot about Nightcrawler. So they're all trying to infiltrate the base to shut down Master Mold and basically throw it into the sun because they built their giant ship next to the sun.
Yes.
For reasons. I guess so the mutants couldn't get close enough or wouldn't see it behind the sun.
People wouldn't get to
it. But that backfires and they figure it out. So the end of this issue, they blow up the ship that all the X-Men are in.
Yeah.
And we don't know what happens next. Bum, 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 bum. House 4 opens up with Professor X.
Dun, dun, dun.
Like a lot of these issues, Professor X is talking to Magneto and Storm and the third Cuckoo, and they're in this pool of water, and all of a sudden Jean Grey's face pops up in the pool of water. It kind of reminds me of the holograms from Star Wars, except they are the mutants instead of the Star Wars characters. And they're just saying, oh man, the ship exploded, a lot of people are hurt, Wolverine's arm is basically torn off, Nightcrawler's got internal bleeding, and Archangel gets straight up killed at the beginning, along with Husk. They just get straight up yoinked. So then Nightcrawler teleports everyone else in, except for Monet and Jean Grey, because they need to keep them as, communication, and then Monet protects Jean Grey. So all four of the X-Men, Wolverine, Mystique, Nightcrawler, Cyclops, go to pull the levers and destroy the base. But they catch on to what they're doing, and most of them die.
Remember, no spoilers. We're not doing a full spoiler cast for this.
I know. That's why I didn't go full into the details. And that's the end. Professor X cries. Next up is issue Powers of 4.
Powers of X, number 4.
Powers of 4.
Powers of 4. That's a whole different book. So we jump back in
time.
That's a prequel. Yes, it is. We jump back to early X-Men stuff, where this is, by the way, one of our favorite issues. Because it's all about Mr. Sinister.
Yeah, it is. Is this a sassy Sinister?
Yes, it is.
Hell yeah.
So it's Magneto and Xavier going to Bar Sinister to see Mr. Sinister and to recruit him. And you get to see a very sassy, very, very flamboyant, very awesome version of Sinister.
I love Sinister when he's sassy.
Yo, he's so sassy. I'm not going to spoil any of this. I'm not going to spoil it. It's so good. And the three of them come up with a plan. And it's to harvest all the genetic material they can from every mutant on the planet.
Yeah, they want to keep it in a data bank, basically, so they can use it for later things.
Right, which we don't know yet.
Which we get to.
And then we jump back to, we're still in the past, we're right when Krakoa is being built, and Cypher and Xavier Xavier explains the history of Krakoa to Cypher, where we are now introduced to the fact that Cypher used to be one massive landmass that was split into two, where he was getting attacked by... They were attacked by a group of monsters, I guess, demons? I don't know. So, you know, it's hard because they don't really explain it.
Yeah.
Because it's like a pseudo-backstory, and then explain how Apocalypse saved them with his first four horsemen. By the way, I remember Jonathan Hickman wrote a story for Marvel 1000 talking about the original four horsemen. Mm-hmm. And so his original four horsemen are there, and then Cypher is tasked with making Krakoa habitable for mutants. And then we jump to year 1000 again, where humans are trying to descend, and one of them breaks down the phalanx, and it pretty much starts a war with them. Now we're into House 5.
I just realized House 5 is where the opening comes from.
Yes, you know that?
I didn't put it together because I read it when they were coming out. So, House of X number 5 opens up with Magneto and Polaris talking in Krakoa about what they've accomplished in humans, and then we get introduced to the 5. The 5 are Fabio Medina, a.k.a. Gold Balls, a minor character from the Uncanny X-Men series who was also put into the Miles Morales series. He basically just shoots gold balls out of his chest, but now he's special. We also have Kevin McTaggart, or Proteus,
mm-hmm.
Joshua Foley, Elixir, Ava Bell Tempest, and Hope Summers.
Yep.
I forgot Hope was here.
Yes.
I was thinking the other day, like, where the fuck is Hope in this scenario? I forgot she's here.
She's there.
So, we see them all walk in, all cool-like. I love seeing Gold Balls act all serious, because he's not a serious character. So, we find out that Gold Balls can use his balls to create, like, an egg.
Use his balls to make an egg.
They charge it up with reality-warping Proteus. They use mutant DNA. Elixir touches it, and everybody comes back to life, because they use Ava Bell's time powers to
make the egg...
To make the eggs hatch...
Viable.
Full humans.
And then Hope combines all the powers together.
Yeah. And that's how we get the opening of House of X, where all the X-Men are crawling out naked.
Yes.
And Professor X goes, to me, my X-Men. And then he gives Cyclops his visor. It's just weird. But it opens up the whole weird cult that the X-Men started. Storm, like, leads this cult. Brothers and sisters of Krakoa, a great thing has happened today. A miracle made possible by mutant hands, the work of the Great Five. Like, it screams cult.
Oh, absolutely.
One of the lines Storm goes, love them, for they have righted the wrongs of man and defeated our great enemy, death.
Yep.
It's just so weird. And then everybody stands on a stage naked.
Yep.
And then Storm kisses them all in the head, and they go, what is he? Mutant! It's just so weird.
It's also explaining, like, oh, hey, who they are.
Yeah.
How do you know who I am?
It's good to see everybody united and everybody having fun, but it's also weird that it's a cult now. The X-Men are a cult now. We've hit that status, boys. After the cult stuff, it jumps to Emma Frost and Beast meeting up with Professor X. They're doing the drug pharmaceutical meetup. Then we get a map of diplomacy, and then we get to see all the villains enter Krakoa for the first time.
Yeah.
Because Krakoa is not only for the X-Men, it is for every mutant, no matter who they are. We see Sinister and the Morlocks basically show up. We see Gorgon enter with, like I said, Black Tom, the Black Queen, it looks like Domino, Apocalypse, and then everyone's just kind of like, all right, we're okay with this. These are mutants, technically. But everyone, we find out later in a tiny bit, that they all made kind of peace with each other because they're all mutants.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that we get to see a lot more villains take a center stage, because a lot of the X-Men villains get kind of thrown off.
Because they're bad guys.
I know, but like a lot of them don't get a lot of screen time.
All right, let's finish wrapping this up. We only got what issue are you on?
I'm on House 5.
And I have Powers 5, and you have one each.
Let's
ready?
Go.
So we go back to the past with X-Men Year 1, where Forge is, Xavier and Forge are building the new version of Cerebro.
I love this scene, because Forge is like, I know I can do it, but what do you mean?
It's yeah, just so cool. Like, it's a whole Forge breakdown, think. Exactly, yeah, it's mm-hmm. a full breakdown of what Cerebro is and why the mutants are being resurrected the way they are. And it's called 7.5 is the actual version of Krakoa. Then we jump to the current time, right after the meeting with the UN and them becoming a sovereign state, where we are introduced to something called the Quiet Council of Krakoa.
Yeah, buddy. The Quiet Council.
And in it, Emma asks for 3 seats on the council.
They all basically get 3 seats.
Well, each section has 3 seats.
Yes.
She was only given 2. She asked for a 3rd seat. They would have put someone else there. They
haven't revealed who it is yet, right?
No, they haven't. And we don't know yet, even now.
Oh, wait, I had a theory on who it was.
When we get to the theory section, we'll get to
it. Oh, no, I know who it is.
So, as of issue 6, issue 5 powers, a Quiet Council of Xavier, Magneto for Autumn. For Winter, we don't know yet. For Spring, it was Black King, Sebastian Shaw, White Queen, Emma Frost, Summers blanked out, and Krakoa himself and Cypher have their own seats. They're 13 and 14.
Doug Locke.
As the villains gather, and Xavier invites everyone, he goes to Namor. And he invites Namor, and Namor just shits all over the planet.
And this ties into Zdarsky's Invaders book. Yeah. Just loosely, because of the mutant tie that Namor has now.
He talks about and shits all over Xavier's plan about how he's tried to do this before. And yeah, he's like,
fuck you. Come back when you're better.
Yeah, when you actually know how to do this.
It's so funny.
It jumps to year 1000, where the Phalanx is falling apart. And the
Phalanx are weird looking, man.
Yeah, I don't like this version of the Phalanx, honestly. How the Phalanx are falling apart. And how they're going to consume the planet. How they're going to destroy the planet now. And then that was it for Powers 5. Now we jump to the last issue of House.
House of X number 6. Dude, this is where it gets fucking nuts. And this is where our theory really gets fucking thrown into the "you're probably right" scenario. They never show you what Professor Xavier's face looks like, except for that one scene where he's talking to Doug on Krakoa, but they put shade over the top of his head.
Yep.
So we don't know what he looks like, and we'll get to that theory later. This is basically Professor X telling literally everyone on Earth in one massive call. He gets the Avengers, he gets Fantastic Four, Doctor Strange. Like, the mutants are doing their own thing. Don't fuck with them, we won't fuck with you. We're in the middle of the ocean. Good luck.
Yeah.
We see Gregor, we see Omega Sentinel. Moira McTaggart is there too. Oh yeah, and we get more of the Quiet Council.
Which is now revealed to be?
Oh, it was Exodus. That was the guy in the other one. So the Quiet Council is Autumn, Professor X, Magneto, and Apocalypse. That was the 3rd seat of what?
Yeah.
When I saw that, I was like, no way. Winter, Mr. Sinister. Yes. Exodus and Mystique. Spring, Black King, Sebastian Shaw, White Queen, Emma Frost, Red King, don't know, name looks short, I think it's Omega Red.
They think it's Kitty.
Kitty would be cool too.
Oh, I'll get to that when we do...
Yeah, when we get to our books.
Yeah.
Summer, Storm, Jean Grey, Nightcrawler, Krakoa, Doug Locke, and Krakoa himself. Then we have the Great Captain, Cyclops, Gorgon, Bishop, and Magic. I guess they're backups, basically.
They're the ones that run the teams.
That makes a lot of sense. What team does Gorgon run?
We don't know yet.
Maybe you're right.
X-Corps.
Ooh, yeah. Or
he might be the head of actually X-Force.
Ooh, that'd be good too. Okay.
Or maybe Emma does, because Emma runs...
Yeah, Emma runs the other one.
Yeah.
So, Bishop's here. Anyway, you know what would be really cool? If we get Mr. Sensitive to show up. Or Orphan and hang out, and that's the excellent team, because that's totally part of Dawn of X. Fuck you.
I'm not having this fight with you.
We can fight about this for hours.
I can't, and I'll win every time.
You won't. So we just see the meeting. They're discussing what happens with Sabretooth, and they go over the rules.
What are the 3 laws, Hunter?
Make more mutants, which is the Great Five.
Yep.
Murder no man and respect the sacred land. So don't shit talk Krakoa or you dead, basically.
Yeah.
So Sabretooth broke one of these laws, and maybe 2, kind of, when he... I don't know if he shit talks for sure Krakoa, but I know he says something.
He shit talks the land.
He doesn't shit talk the land, he shit talks the council. Which yeah. Technically counts as the land.
Yeah.
But he murders people on there when him and Mystique get the data.
Yep.
Which is a rule that he broke, so he gets thrown into the pit. I won't explain to you what the pit is, but it is honestly really scary. And it makes you go, Professor X is not a good guy.
Mm-hmm.
And the Quiet Council they all bicker back and forth. And then they kind of just agree, like, all right. Professor X goes, it's distasteful, I know, this business of running a nation. It's like, all right. Then they have an orgy. It's not really an orgy. It's a big party. But a lot of people on the internets are dubbing it the X-Men orgy. It's so crazy. You see everyone hanging out. Banshee's back. Dazzler's back. Female Banshee's back.
Siren.
Siren, that's her name? Okay. Yep. We see Gold Balls hanging out. We see Wolverine take a beer and go hand it to Gorgon, showing a good, you know, sign of peace. And just everyone having a good time, smiling and winking at each other. It's great. And totally not sexy at all. Then we see more Krakoa maps, and we get Powers of X number 6.
So everything comes ahead here. We jump back to the first meeting of Xavier and Moira McTaggart. And what the actual vision she shows him, which then jumps us to year 1000, where those two naked people we saw in the beginning of Powers are revealed to be Moira and Wolverine, still alive 1,000 years in the future.
Because of course he is.
The librarian, the character that we've been following in House, explains...
He's basically Blue Professor X.
Yeah. Explains to them that mutants, no matter what happens, will die. And Moira is then killed by Wolverine, which answers the whole sixth life question.
Well, because... That's the sixth life? Okay.
Yeah, year 1000 is the sixth life.
Okay. So, but you skipped over a tiny part. I know it's some spoilers. I'll give a little bit. The reason why they lose is because the Phalanx always absorbs everything.
Yes.
That the whole idea is the Phalanx absorbs all of life and makes it into its own self.
Into the Phalanx, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's the vision that Moira shows Xavier. And that's where they explain...
And then he passes out.
And he passes out for a little bit. And
he's like, whoa.
That, explain like a dream's not a dream.
Yeah.
And then make it happen. And then it's Moira and Xavier's... It's Moira's journal talking about her journey with Xavier.
Yeah.
So bring it to the three of them talking amongst themselves where Moira's been this entire time since she's been dead, since the Legacy Virus. Mm-hmm. Which is like, no, we just faked it.
Yeah, she's hiding.
She was in shadows. And it's the fact that the three of them are quietly... The three of them are truly ruling Krakoa, yeah, instead of the Quiet Council. Mm-hmm. And that she doesn't want precogs on the island.
Yeah, because which precogs can... reveal what the future is,
yep,
and see that the X-Men always lose, in quotes, because we never know with all the writing that's happening. Yeah. So Mystique's, one of her things on why she joined is she wants Destiny back.
Yep.
And she's a precog. So they're basically, Professor X goes, we're going to stall as long as possible.
Yeah, we'll lie to her as long as possible. And
that's going to cause some problems.
Yep, because it looks like Magneto and Xavier don't agree with Moira, and then it looks like Apocalypse is going to do his own thing.
Yeah, we get that in Excalibur, written by Tim Howard. I can't wait for that book. It's going to be so good.
And that is the end of Powers of X and House of X. They spin off to 6 books, which are, I'm going to read them off now, in order of release. X-Men number 1, which came out last week. Marauders number 1, which came out this week. Next week is Excalibur number 1. Then after that, it's X-Force and New Mutants. And then after that is Fallen Angels.
Yeah, buddy.
And we are into the Dawn of X.
That is Wave 1. And then we have a Moira McTaggart book coming out. I briefly talked about that last week with my boys, but I didn't go too deep into it because they don't know anything about comic books. They mostly just know Spider-Man stuff and a couple Batman things, which is why we talked about Spider-Man movies. But a Moira McTaggart
book... We also don't know anything about it yet.
Yeah. A Moira McTaggart book, I hope it delves more details into some of her lives.
Yeah,
to explain. And I hope it's not an ongoing. I hope it's like a mini.
Yeah, if they make each issue
a life.
If they do a 10-issue series, or don't even make 10 issues, because some of them are covered in this one.
Yeah.
Like, don't do life 1.
Do a 6.
Yeah. Do 6 or 12.
I want to see more of the spy stuff.
Yeah.
Where she's an assassin.
Yeah.
I think more details than that would be really cool.
Yeah, any life where she died each and it's kind of open.
Be like a double-sized issue. Make it like $5.
Make it $5, yeah.
And then a 6-issue mini and each one is just big.
Yeah.
I think it'd be cool.
Because you can explain each life, except for, like, you don't have to do life 10, because that's what we're in now.
We don't need 9, and we don't need 6. And we don't need
1.
Yeah, so we need the other ones.
Yeah, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7, 8. Yeah. Yeah, 6 issues.
Is there one where what's the one where she gets killed by Pyro? I don't think we need that
4.
One. I don't think we need that
one. I mean, it's 4.
Either way. So we need to do a 5-issue mini. Marvel usually does 5-issue minis anyway.
Yeah, that's
so
fine.
We get a 5-issue mini of the lives. We didn't really get too many details in.
So we're going to jump into our book reviews.
I'm going to do both of them
back to back.
So last week, I skipped over X-Men number 1 on purpose. I wanted to do it out of spite. But then I was like, James would get a little bit mad.
You could have. I wouldn't have cared.
Yeah, but then it would have ruined our whole episode for next week. So good I didn't.
Yeah, that's true.
So hit us.
I will be doing Dawn of X reviews until the series, until Wave 1 is over.
Well, you're going to do every X-Men book, even Wolverine and X-Corp.
Yeah.
And then I'll handle X-Link.
So, we're in Dawn of X now, guys. We're going to start off with the flagship books. Start off with X-Men number 1, written by Jonathan Hickman. I'm dying.
Polyamorous relationship.
That's literally why my wife's reading the book.
It's so funny, dude. I love this new X-Men drama that we're getting. It's a soap opera again, just like the old book, and I can't wait for
more.
Hit me with it.
Written by Jonathan Hickman and art by Leanne Francis Yu. I want to get it right. So the book opens up with some flashback when Xavier first met Cyclops, and then we jump into, again, it's not a spoiler issue, Cyclops and Storm on a mission against Orcus, and realizing they have a bunch of weapons and lots of things they shouldn't have. Because they realize that they are, no matter what, now that they're selling the drugs to humanity, that there are people that still stand against them, and that Orcus still has people around to stop them. So they're trying to use the laws like, no man kills, and stuff like that. So then they free all the people, all the mutants that are trapped, and bring them to Krakoa, where we get to see Xavier more. It's really this entire issue is Cyclops. It's really told by the point of view of Cyclops and Krakoa, and him living and being...
Him living on the moon.
And him doing his thing. But it's funny, you get to see this weird cult of Magneto being formed.
Yeah.
And if you go back to the House of X stuff, there is a part on Krakoa called the House of M.
Yeah.
Which is his citadel.
Yeah, and we always know that Magneto's going to have his own sidekick.
Yeah. And
no matter what, same with Apocalypse.
Right.
Excalibur's looking like Apocalypse is going to, like, take control, even though it's led by Psylocke. Captain Britain.
Captain Britain.
Apocalypse is going to take control of that right quick.
Exactly. So it's the whole thing about Cyclops trying to find out his place in the world, and that he really, really believes in. Damn it!
You're dying.
No, this cough will never go away.
His old man cough.
It is his place and his belief in the dream. Then we jump back to Orcus, that they're still doing their thing and trying to build Nimrod, and they go to the blue area of the moon, where Scott Summers lives, and his family's visiting. He has a...
it's everybody from the cover.
We have Kosea visiting with Star Jammers. And I do like the line with Kid Cable, Teen Cable. And he's like, Mom...
one line?
Yeah. Mom, do you mind if I trade guns with Rasa? Set the table for a steer. I'm like, Jesus Christ.
It's so funny, dude.
It is funny. And it's like Star Jammers interacting at the Summers' house. And apparently Vulcan's bringing people that he shouldn't. But what it is, the Summer House has, I hate this room plan, but I'm going to explain it in really quick terms.
Explain the fun stuff last, explain the regular stuff first.
Summer's House is where they live. You got the observation deck, tactical stuff, basically anything that anything they had at the X-Mansion they have here. Then they have the room set up, which is weird. So, the rooms are Vulcan's room and Havoc's room on one side, Cable and Rachel's. It was fine. Like, his brother's on one side.
A couple blank rooms,
his kids, yeah. The third, which is funny because that goes back to the third, the theory that Gambit's one of the Summers' kids, but it's not really. We don't know yet.
That'd be awesome, dude. He kind of looks like Corsair. You know what? You're making a lot of sense. I never knew that theory.
Did you ever read the book X-Men The End?
No.
So in the book, they allude to the fact that Gambit is actually a clone of Mr. Sinister and Cyclops. That he's actually Sinister's son.
Okay.
Because...
I mean, it kind of makes sense.
The same power set... And all that.
Yeah, I could believe it. And we know that Gambit works for Sinister a lot more than most of X-Men. Most of X-Men do.
Yep.
That'd be really cool.
He was the third...
Kinetic energy, same with Cyclops.
He was revealed, because Sinister talks about having a third Summers brother.
Yeah.
Back in the day. And then for a long time, everyone thought it was Adam Extreme.
Yeah, because that's fun.
And then it was revealed to be... then it was hinted that it was Gambit, and then it was finally revealed that it was Vulcan.
You know what's great? Extreme is alive.
Mm-hmm.
Because of all the active mutant stuff.
He's been alive. He never got killed.
Yeah, I know, but he's never relevant. Now he can technically be relevant again.
He's been in books. Really. In fact, there was a scene where he shows up with other teammates from the 90s, mm-hmm. and they kick the shit out of him.
That's great.
So, no, he's relevant. It's just he's stupid.
I remember when the first wave was getting announced and someone made that leaked, leaked image.
Yeah,
of the Extreme. Dude, that would have been awesome if he gets another book.
No.
Give it a 5-issue mini.
No, give it nothing. Give him nothing.
Give him nothing. He rides a skateboard and he wears a backwards hat. Give him nothing.
Yeah, something
He's
nice.
Kind of like El Guapo. Ecstatics, man. Basically, when you're on vacation, I read the whole of Ecstatics, and now I'm like all Ecstatics on the brain, man. I'm so hyped for Excellence.
Excellence.
Yeah.
So they have revealed that there might be more than one Summers brother, so it might be cool that Gambit might be actually one of Summers brothers.
Yeah, but he's not going to live there unless Rogue gets to live with him.
Well, we don't know if that's still canon, remember?
If they break them up.
Who wrote that book?
Kelly Thompson.
And I remember Kelly Thompson said on Twitter they asked her and she was like, I don't know.
Because Tinny Howard has control. I feel like Tinny Howard wouldn't do that.
No.
Tinny Howard loves that kind of stuff.
And then Cable and Rachel have rooms, so there's a room in between, so we think that there might be another baby coming.
I hope.
might be Hope's room too. Mm-hmm. And then you have Cyclops, Jean's, and Wolverine's room.
Hell yeah, Wolverine's in the Summer's house. I don't know why. Yeah.
So the rooms are adjacent to each other, and they both connect into Jean's room.
They have... So every other room
is separated.
Has no doors in between, except for these three. It's just so funny.
It's not. It's... I hate it so much. They're in a throuple.
They're in a throuple. Well, because they hinted the throuple a bunch of times.
I hate it so
there's
much.
There's evidence of it. There's a three I'm and so evidence.
Mad. I'm like, Jonathan Hickman. Yo, I swear to God, I'm so mad. And then they explain the weird house thing set up. And they explain how they eat and live on Krakoa. And how the future is bright. And it really is the dawn of X. This is like the best. Yeah, this is the best way to introduce the world to the world. And then it explains that the doctor behind Orcus is coming back to life. Mm-hmm. So,
of course, Orcus is coming back.
My best part of that book, everything about that book's phenomenal. Actually, my favorite
line. Thruple?
Alright, so, my favorite part of the book. I know. My favorite part of the book is where you get to see the Summers family interact with that Vulcan's back, and it's pre him being bad. It's him if he never became evil Emperor Vulcan. My worst part about this is a thruple. But I'll see where that goes.
I feel like that's not dumb fun.
Yeah. And then, so I'm going to give it out of 5. I'm definitely giving it a 5. Mm-hmm. I definitely want to see where it goes. And it's cool as this being the dawn of X, that this is the first book.
And there's no, it's just called X-Men. And it's there's no, X-Men. Like, there's adjectives describes to it. It's just X-Men.
Yep.
This is your X-Men book.
Then my actual book of the week.
Because it came out this
week. Is Marauders, number 1. Written by Jeremy Duggan, and the art by Matteo Lali. So, we open up with not so long ago. This is right after. This is all after House of Powers, where they are bringing mutants from New York into Krakoa, and Kitty can't walk through the gate, and she breaks her nose on the gate.
And she gets a black eye.
And she gets a black eye. Well, that's what happens when you break your nose.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
You always get a black eye when you break your nose.
I guess because it hits into it somewhere.
Yeah. That's why Kitty has the patch and everything.
I know you didn't want me to, like, talk during your review, kind of, but I just want to point this one out. I love that so much.
Oh, the face thing?
The face thing. Because, like, for all the posters we've seen and all the promotional stuff, she has the broken nose and the black eye. I'm like, how the fuck did she get this?
We get
the first page.
Immediately answered.
It's just so funny.
And it's the dumbest way to answer.
Sorry, continue.
But yeah, so she can't, for some reason which we don't know, she can't travel to the portals. So she has to take a boat from San Diego to Krakoa. Where she's going there to ship out. She's bringing back supplies for Wolverine because he wants real food because Krakoa they can only eat shit that Krakoa makes.
Which is kind of lame.
She realized she's trying to find her purpose because she's not doing much of anything. She can't live with the mutants that are there because she has to travel. She can't travel with them anywhere, and she doesn't want to be stuck on the island. So Emma offers her to be the captain of her ship.
Cruise line.
Of her ship. For the Hellfire Trading Company, so they can make money and ship the drugs where they need to go, but also free mutants that are in totalitarian countries.
That's awesome.
Their first stop is Russia, and where Kitty starts recruiting some of her teammates for this mission, but then also realizes that Pyro was sleeping on the ship that she had stolen, and it's the original Pyro. Which I know you're super hyped for.
I'll wait to yell about it after you're done. I will respect your wishes.
So they go to Russia, they fight a bunch of anti-mutant terrorists, and then realize this is now the Marauders will be a team that will go out and get mutants from countries that won't let them come home. Because mm-hmm. she technically can't do that. And that's the start of the Marauders, and then she gets her new name. Well, she accepts a proposal from Emmer. She says yes to both proposals, which goes back to that whole Red King thing. Mm-hmm. That she might also be the Red King.
She's wearing that red.
And she has a red. Yeah, she has a red handkerchief, and she takes the name Kate, and they take the name Marauders. And there's a back page from Boss Sinister, which is talking about some shit that might be going down. So my favorite part about the book is that it's a cool setup. It's a very clean opening for a new team that hasn't ever been around. It kind of gives you get to see bits and pieces of who the characters are. And kind of the world at large, how they're reacting to the mutants.
What's your least
My favorite? Least favorite part of the book.
If you say Pyro, I quit.
I know. honestly, I don't have a least... I don't have a least favorite part of the book. Because it's issue 1. I think everything's actually really good. It's a good setup. It's a great setup. The art's great. The story's great. It's fine. I mean, even the characters are fine. The comedy hits when it's funny. The action hits when it's needed. The message is clear that they're not a force for evil, that they're going to go out. I think the splash page where she's like, where she's turned around and she's pointing towards Rita about the Marauder's name thing is a throwback to the Professor Xavier jerk line.
Yeah.
Which I think is cool as an X-Men fan, but other than that, I think it's just an overall great book. I definitely recommend. I definitely give it a 5 out of 5.
You're going to give all these X-Men books 5
no,
out of
5? No, because I... The
you
one
already know Fallen Angels?
No, no, no. The one book I'm actually really worried about is New Mutants.
Yeah, I was really excited about the book, but now that I'm reading more into it, it seems like it's going to be really fucking weird.
I feel like New Mutants...
Why are they in space?
That's my thing. We'll see when issue 1 comes out.
Yeah, we'll see.
Which so, is next? I just went down the list before.
Yeah.
So, yep, definitely, I'm giving you Marauders a 5 out of 5. Definitely check it out. Again, this Dawn of X thing is pretty cool. Oh, they did now Dawn of X trade paperback coming out.
Which is issue 1 of every single one.
Every single one.
So, before I get into my reviews, I do want to talk about Pyro.
Yes, I
did. I gushed about him before. I love this. First of all, the art looks fantastic. But after they steal the boat, we get Pyro. He wakes up and he goes, "Oi!" The Australian oi. Dude, I fucking love it. He says, you know, "Can't I get some sleep? What's going on?" And then Iceman goes, "Pyro, that accent, you're the original." Because Iceman, as we know, was sleeping with Simon.
Yep.
In X-Men Gold, the new Pyro, which we haven't seen yet, but we'll see him in the background. But he was technically a mutate, similar to Deadpool, so maybe.
No, he's a mutant.
I thought he was given... Oh, no, he was given the costume and the name. Yeah. So we just get super Australian Sanjay John. I thought it was Cassidy for some reason. Sanjay John. So he basically explains, he's like, "Oh man, I don't remember a damn thing. I suddenly woke up on an island. Turns out I was the first one to be resurrected. I felt so special until I realized I was the lab rat," which I find hilarious. Pyro's always been shafted in the books.
Yeah.
He gets introduced, he's kind of like, "Oh man, he's Pyro. He does fire stuff." And in the movies, he was always kind of lame. But like, having him go, "Oh man, I felt so special that I was the first one to be revived," because he died of like cancer.
I can't remember.
Like a really long time ago.
Legacy virus. No, I think it was legacy virus. Maybe.
Like a really long time ago. And he wakes up and he's like, "Oh, I felt so special to be the first one revived. And then I was just the test subject and I felt bad. So I was going to steal a boat and run away." And then he's now on the team. And it's just so great. One complaint. Kitty Pryde. Oh, Kate. Looks so young.
That's the artist thing, though.
You mentioned that before and you might be right. But like, Kate's been like getting super mature. Because obviously she's growing up with the books.
Yeah.
And in X-Men Gold, we see her, and same with Uncanny X-Men Rosenberg's run. She's like a full-on adult, not like a kid anymore. But this one de-ages her. It could just be the artist, but it also could be a new body for her.
Yeah, it's true.
She could be put back in her best self, which happens to be her younger self, which is really weird. Anyway, sorry for stepping on that a little bit.
It's all good.
But I want to talk about Pyro.
Oh, no. Before we get going to your book, let's do our X-Men theories.
X-Men theories. Hit me with them.
So,
I think the Red King is Omega Red. I think I said that earlier.
Oh, no,
I think it's Omega Red. I think it'll be cool because he's getting like teased in X-Men 4 or 3.
He was on the cover of the foreshadowing variant.
Yeah.
And he's ripping himself out of the pit.
I thought he was coming out of the Krakoa...
the gateway thing,
Gateway.
Because he got himself on the pit.
Oh, I thought it was going to be the Red King. I still hold that theory. Honestly, because it's Omega Red and it's the Red King. But it could also be Kate Pryde. What are your theories? Because you have more of them.
No, so the Red King theory, she's called the... So the cover that came out today with the hold fast on her tattoo one, it's actually called the Red Queen variant.
Mm. So maybe the King is a... pseudo title.
It might be, or it could be someone we haven't seen yet. It may also be someone that's one of the great captains that we haven't seen yet.
Maybe Bishop.
That, or we might see someone, or someone they're going to introduce in the book.
Yeah.
So we don't know who the Red King is. My Sinister theory still stands.
Yeah, well, I think we talked about it a couple episodes ago, but Mr. Sinister and Professor X are definitely doing some canoodling.
Yeah, there's something more, and he'll be in Fallen Angels.
Yes, which is, it makes sense.
Yep.
When that book got announced, I was like, who the fuck's the villain going to be? And I know Mr. Sinister's not a villain in this book, in the X-Men stuff now.
Yeah.
But Mr. Sinister makes sense.
And then, any other theories? So now both those books have come out.
Yes.
Any other theories you think you might have going forward?
theories, no. Hopes and aspirations, of course.
Oh, yeah.
I want all of the X-Men to be great. I want to see everybody come back.
Yes.
I'm glad we got Pyro back for the first time in, like, forever.
Mm-hmm.
I love seeing all the teams. I just wish that we had more teams. I know they don't want to launch 100 books.
No, that's the...
But, like, the teams just seem so weird right now.
I'm okay with the teams they have.
Well, the current X-Men team is going to be interchange.
Yeah.
Because it's Cyclops picking X-Men for...
Whatever mission is needed.
But I thought it was kind of lame that he was just kind of, like, hanging out at his house the whole issue. But it was a good setup.
Yeah, it was cool just to see, like, the first X-Men kind of, like, what his life isn't going to be like now. You know. Also because he went great captain, so that's why that book's around him. I think we'll get more theories and more stuff as the issue ones come out.
Of course.
And we'll add to our pile, and I think
we have Apocalypse theories. Like
because Apocalypse will be back. He's gonna be
a bad guy again.
You know, my big thing though, I do wish that hopefully down the line, and soon the rest of the Marvel universe will kind of reference Krakoa in a bigger way.
I think they will in the next arcs of the books because the current arcs were written a while ago.
I mean, even Contagion, they talk about Krakoa.
Yeah, because that book was announced at the same time, so they were able to write it in that amount of time.
Yeah.
But, like, Avengers isn't going to mention it until probably the arc
until after, out. Arc is over. Yeah. But I think the biggest thing they should do, and I think across the board, I think the biggest thing that they should do is start mentioning it, but also make it where it matters. So they make it seem like it matters. Don't, like,
I think Black Panther's going to mention it real quick,
too. The thing I was going to say is, that Jonathan Hickman brings back, since he brought back characters like Pyro, to not forget characters like Jimmy that exists out there. It's supposed to be every mutant ever and all this other stuff out there. Don't forget there are mutants that are on this earth that aren't from our reality. What do you do with them? What do you do with all this other stuff?
Yeah, we'll get the Exiles eventually. I feel like the Exiles are definitely going to get a book.
Or any character, any character that's on 616. I'm not even talking about, like, alternate reality stuff.
Okay. They can even keep Blink as the Exiles leader.
Right,
have a different team.
Any character that's just on our... Any mutant that's on our Earth needs to be in this book at some point. You know, or cameoed or whatever.
Mm-hmm. So, in the background somewhere.
Yeah. So, you ready?
My
book. How's your book?
My book, The Amazing Mary Jane. I was very skeptical on this book because I was like, who the fuck wants to read a Mary Jane book? The answer, I want to read a Mary Jane book, because this book's actually really good.
Okay, why?
So, initially, it spins out of Amazing Spider-Man 25. They reveal Kindred, and Mysterio basically leaves, heads to Hollywood after, like, quote-unquote, escaping Kindred, and he starts writing his movie on how to basically sympathize with Mysterio, making him, like, a good guy. But he takes over the body of this super famous director named Cage McKnight, and he recruits Mary Jane to be his female lead, and it opens up with Mary Jane just doing some of the action. She's in a really tight latex suit for some reason. They explain it later on, it's part of the script. And so she just basically walks around the set talking about the movie. She meets up with Cage McKnight. Turns out it's Mysterio. Mysterio convinces her to keep the movie going as long as Mary Jane gets to change the motivations of her character and make her better. It's basically a comic book writing a movie, which I really love. So as, like, a movie guy, when I was reading this, I was like, this is fucking awesome. I noticed that I skipped who made it because I was excited. Lee Williams is the writer and Carlos Gomez is the artist. Now, we have been not shitting on Lee Williams.
No.
But at the store, we've been talking a little bit of trash about one of her books. That's Gwenpool Strikes Back. That book is terrible.
We just don't like it. It's too cringy. It's cringy for the sake of being cringy.
Yeah, it's cringe culture. You're kind of doing, like, older Deadpool books where, like, haha, this is funny, lol, random, and that's what this book's becoming. But Lee Williams is a great writer in her own respect. Chastity is good, Amazing Mary Jane's good, and other books that I haven't checked out are good, too.
You're the most ridiculous co-host I've ever had.
Dude, I have to be.
No.
You're my straight man.
Am I in this?
I mean... Yeah. Anyway, so Lee Williams does a fantastic job with Mary Jane. I feel like she really feels out Mary Jane. Like, because it kind of comes off like... So her humor and, like, her writing style shines through. Because a lot of the cringy stuff you see in Gwenpool Strikes Back is actually really good in this book. There's a scene where Spider-Man and Mary Jane are talking on the phone. And it opens up with Peter going, "What are you wearing?" And then Mary Jane answers and replies, "What are you wearing?" And Peter goes, "I'm shirtless, wearing the tightest leather pants you can imagine. Also, I'm soaking wet for some reason. Yeah, I show up at your door soaking wet and shirtless and shivering." Like,
what?
It's just, thirsty as hell.
It works. And then they're having like a small argument, and Mary Jane takes a picture of herself wearing her outfit and sends it to Peter, and he goes, "Oh gosh, you're really pretty right now." And it's just dumb fun. And I honestly love this book a lot more than I thought I would. Which is great, because for the last couple months, I was like, why the fuck do you want to do a Mary Jane book? And now I'm reading it, like, this is great.
All right, so, such a good favorite part of the book?
I like the movie stuff. Okay. So there's another scene in it where Quentin talks about what he did with the actual Cage McKnight, and he's like, I sent him on a film retreat. He thinks he's filming the penguin version of Jaws. Oh, so he's taking a year to study penguins, and he's like, I got this baby monitor app, and I'm watching him. And I thought it was super funny. I also love the back and forth between Mysterio and Mary Jane a lot for some reason. They're characters who haven't really interacted a lot, but they seem like they've interacted so much already.
Yeah.
In one book. It's great. Yeah, she looks good. Worst part, how thirsty they make Peter Parker. Peter Parker is beyond... Oh, yeah, no, he says they're robots.
I know.
Yeah. Cool. Peter Parker is beyond thirsty in this book.
That's your worst
and
part?
He acts like a sniveling idiot. He goes, oh, man, I don't want you to have, like, scandals or sleep with all these directors and all this. And Mary Jane goes, bro, I'm not going to. Like, trust me. And he's like, I trust you. It's just, you know, Hollywood nowadays, winks at the audience. So this book, 5 out of 5, I'd have to say.
If it's going in.
Dude, we're going, all these books are
amazing. Man, he's thirsty as shit, sorry.
Dude, I told you, he's thirsty as shit. He's so thirsty. That's the worst part about it, but it doesn't take away from the book. It honestly makes the book funnier. This is a funny book.
And like the photo he sends, like she sends him, is like nine.
You know what it's going. You don't did see it, but you know what it's going to be.
No, cause they, yeah.
You see what she's wearing. Yeah. You see the angle she takes. Yeah. It. It's a nice picture.
Yeah.
It's funny, dude. The book's great. I might actually start picking it up, like officially. I wasn't gonna start picking it up, and then I read this. I was like, it's an ongoing, which I think is weird, but. I thought it should be a 12
issue. It's going to be one of those announced ongoing and not. I know, but
if you think about it, if they announced it as a 12 issue miniseries, it could have gone on as each month is a film month. Like,
yeah.
The first month is this issue they're trying out. Next month they jump ahead, something's happening. And then third, and then there's complications. Yeah. And then it gets canceled, but then they pick it up. They can easily spin that out. Because I don't know how long this book's going to be.
No.
It's honestly really good, though. Now, the.
Story
book of the week.
Now, Hunter.
Before we chose this book, I was flipping through it, and I said, wow, this book is fucking crazy. It is if the Guardians of the Galaxy decided to have sex with every alien. Now, after reading it, it's just about that, but they're not the Guardians of the Galaxy. It's written by Tim Seeley and Sarah Beatty.
It's called...
And drawn by Rebecca Isaacs. What's it called, James?
Money Shot. And it's by Vault Comics.
It is a fantastic book.
So here's a quick little background. In the near future, space travel is ludicrously expensive and largely ignored. Enter Christine Ocampos. Oh, jeez, I can't read. Inventor of the Starshot teleportation device with a big idea. She'll travel for new worlds, engage intimately with local aliens, and film her exploits for a jaded Earth populace trying to find something new on the internet. Now, Chris and her merry band of scientists
come porn stars, spelled
C-U-M, explore the universe, each other, and the complexities of sex. A story about scientists having sex with aliens for glory of mankind and
that's
money.
That's just what the back says. The interior. In the year 2027, an advanced alien civilization made contact, and the people of Earth discovered they were not alone. An offer to join the civilized universe was made. But then the aliens saw what a total shitshow Earth was. Engaged in hundreds of wars led by greedy politicians and fumbling to advance technologically, humanity was deemed not worth the effort. The offer was withdrawn. Unable to build spaceships capable of efficient interstellar traveler, and distracted by petty bickering and pop entertainment, humans eventually lost interest in the stars. Now, in 2032, amid an anti-science presidential administration and public apathy, scientists in an economically crippled America struggle to fund innovative projects. And then the first page. I want you to fuck me, sexy fish man. Thank you, Dr. Ocampo. Great stuff. Already off of the bang.
So, I love how
when we meet all the characters, we see all their porn names.
Yeah, so the porn names are...
Constance Planck.
Planck, yeah.
Supermassive Black Hole. Niels Bohr. Trinity Spears. And we don't know what...
Constance.
Campo's name is?
Campo's name,
really. But it's hinted as.
Oh, Tesla.
It's Tesla Coil, I think.
Yeah, Tesla Coil.
Coil.
Yep.
Yeah, I didn't know what the last name was until you read the thing.
Tesla Coil.
But damn, dude, this book is great.
So, we do full spoiler cast on this, so you get to see, like, as they're about to do this live stream.
They're live streaming sex.
They're live streaming sex.
In this cage with a fish man, and they have a translating robot.
Yep. Called Little Shot.
Little Shot. It's so great.
And how they're talking about...
They're talking about the sex they're going
to
do.
They're setting up the scene and everything. Yeah. And then we finally flash back to the past about why they're even doing this.
Yeah, why they're sexing in space.
So, really what their names are... Constance Planck is also known as Dr. Bree Wander. She's a physicist who is working on... The hell was she working? Oh, her atom communication project.
Dr. Annie Leong. She's an
epidemiologist.
Epidemiologist. She does vaccines and stuff. Yep. She wants to cure diseases.
You have Dr. Omar Steinberg.
He just wants space.
Well, he was doing compressive wave transmitter project, which allows you to send a message in and out of space.
And then we have Dr. Doug Koch, a biochemist who wants to make kale really cool.
Yes.
He's basically like the buff nerd.
Yes, he is.
Which is great. And he's supermassive black hole. And it's hilarious.
Yes. Oh, and Niels Bohr is...
No, Niels Bohr is fucking Omar.
Yeah, Omar
Niels Bohr. Christina Campo is Tesla Coil.
I know, but I'm saying their names. And Trinity Spears is Annie.
Yeah.
So, they have to... There is no way for them to get funding now.
Because no one cares about space anymore.
And Christine is trying to do is to get Little Shot, Starshot into space and to be able to travel to space and figure out life.
And with that pitch that she gave, she recruits all these people to come with her, not to do the sex stuff, that's a second thought, but to do like interstellar, because Bree wants to do alien communication.
Yeah, they want to be able to explore.
So everyone gets their own thing. Yeah.
But the problem is, there's no funding, and they give all their dreams to join her for Starshot, and then they're not getting grant money anymore. Yeah.
So they find a great idea.
So what's happening, one night, Christine goes home.
After being super horny, because apparently her and Omar had a thing that we don't know about.
Oh.
And then she wants to have sex with him, and she's like, fuck, I'm horny.
There's a reason why it's called Money Shot.
Because that's a porn thing.
No, the ship is called Money Shot because of how expensive it is for them to travel.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the title of the book.
No, it's a play on words.
Yeah, because they make fun of it. They're like, Money Shot. It's like, actually called Starshot, but the joke was. But the title is that.
Yes, we know why.
Because it's porn.
Yeah. But the ship is also called the Money Shot because the money it would take for it would be blown. Yeah.
So we jump to Ocampo's apartment. With her cat, which has a communicator on, saying, bad human, bad, because mommy's busy. So, they have this hologram technology, basically, instead of laptops. So, Ocampo goes, command, paused, go to cliterature.com. That's her porn website. Cliterature, that's hilarious. I love this book.
So, she realizes that it was replaced with another website called, replaced with Gonzo Mudo, which is like an intergalactic
fetish site.
And they realize she goes to the comment section. She's like, what the hell is it? She goes to the comment section to see what happened.
First of all, never read the porn comments.
Yeah, never read porn comments, guys.
But then we get YOLO Swag. So boring when they won't talk. 2 out of 10. Lord of the Dongs. What the fuck? They barely fucked the cakes. 2 out of 10. Edgelord of Edging. The Godzilla's tits aren't big enough. 3 out of 10.
So that's the thing. She realizes that people are bored
of basic sex.
Well, the extreme sex.
Yeah.
Of this future. So she uses it as a means to get money to actually do what they want to do, is explore space. So she convinces all her research team to become porn stars.
And here's the pitch for it. At this point, deepfakes can pull a picture of your grandma from your hard drive and mask it on 2 different people going raw dog in a hot tub full of Taco Bell hot fire sauce. Literally everything has been done. Now we're going to change it.
Yep.
It's just like, what the fuck? This writing is awesome.
This episode is definitely going to have a mature content label.
And all they always do.
They always do. But they figured out that they don't have to spend money and give these people, the planets they go to, money.
Yeah, memberships pay for Starshot launches. For a fee, members can watch a live stream of our team and of intrepid explorers crossing into new An unexplored world searching for advanced power sources, untold knowledge, and aliens to fuck. Fuck.
And they have to give... what they're giving away is water and air.
Because that's free on their planet. But up in space, it comes at a cost.
Yeah, because some planets might not have what we have. Mm-hmm. So she recruits each one of them, talking about... she goes to Doug about how he can take the alien stuff, alien flowers and fauna, and create new flavors to help him with his food. Bree can explain, do animal communications.
With aliens.
Yeah. Andy can explore diseases and cures, and Omar just wants to see the stars.
Yeah.
And they go back to the science thing, and then we get to one of the best scenes ever.
Here we go. So hold on. It goes, we can get back to doing what we're supposed to be doing, competing for glory, making the world better, making the world a better place. Sciencing. Moment of silence. Doug goes, supermassive black hole. And everybody's like, what? He goes, my porn name. I'm in, but only if everyone calls me supermassive black hole. And then Ocampo goes, but your real name is Doug Cock, basically.
Yeah.
It's Kosh, but it looks like it could be Cock.
Yeah.
Or maybe that's pronounced differently. I'm reading it as Kosh. And he goes, I'm supermassive black hole. And it's just so great. And then that's where they all get their names.
Yes. So then
they pick their own porn name.
They go back to it flashes back to the planet where they get a rating of 6 out of 5.
After banging the fish dude and then each other.
Yep. So they get a 6 out of 5 out of 10. And then it reveals that they are actually really captives
on the planet. These fish people.
Of these fish people. And he was a guard to watch them.
And they were just like, let's have sex with our live stream thing.
And then
so they give him water.
And then they go to which is Gladiator Ring, but then they're gonna try to meet
Meeting the Bokai
Elder.
He is said to be the only living master of Pona Megra technique, a means of reaching an orgasm capable of generating an energy release of the level of nuclear fission. His balls are the size of watermelons, and they touch the floor. Thank you.
And then immediately, Christine is like, We can get a 9 out of this.
And then the next issue is called Balls to the Wall.
Balls to the Wall. And that was Money Shot. So, Hunter, what was your favorite part?
So good.
What's your favorite part, Hunter?
The whole book. I fucking love this. This is actually right up my
funny.
Alley.
It's actually really fucking funny.
If I love Mary Jane for the comedy, I love this book for literally every inch of fucking color, words, everything in this book is phenomenal. There's in-jokes. There's out-jokes.
Yeah.
There's a scene where she makes the fish guy put on a condom and his face is just hilarious. But, and she calls it a tuna wrap. Dude, it's so good.
And just, you know, there is no... You actually don't get to see the sex.
You don't see the sex, but you do see boobies and you see balls. But you don't see, like,
penetration. It's not as graphic as, like, Faithless, for example.
Yeah, it's not a rated M book.
You know, it is. I mean, so, it is, but, you know, it is.
Yeah.
But it's not as gratuitous as something... Yeah. This is like a hard R comedy.
Yeah, you know, and the guy with the huge balls... His legs are crossed, so you don't see his penis, but you see his balls. Because, yeah, how funny. Like, you never see anyone's dicks. You don't see anyone's vaginas. You
right.
Just see,
you don't see penetration.
Nipples.
You see
nipples, basically. Yeah. And, like, butts.
Yeah. So, it's more... It's like a hard R comedy.
Yeah. It's like I said, Guardians of the Galaxy if they fucked everything. Which is just so funny.
It's so funny. You see the tagline from the book? Their mission, seek out new worlds, discover new life, and fuck it.
Yeah, dude. It's so good.
So, all right. What would be your negative about the book? I only have one stupid negative.
Not a lot happened, if you know what I mean. I know it's a setup book, and it gave us like the origin.
Yeah.
But I feel like they should have given us more of the societal stuff. Like,
yeah.
We get the beginning where it's like the Star Wars scroll, basically. Yeah. Where they're like, in a world. Like, we know the president's not giving money. We know that no one cares about space travel. But yeah. I would like to have seen more of, like, I want to see, like, when they come back and they go, the government won't give us any money. I want to see, like, one of their pitch meetings, like, where they're trying to get money. And then
That was going to be my negative, too, where it's like,
I know the cold open is supposed to be them having sex, but I wish after the cold open, we got them getting funding and then the rest of the story.
Right.
It only could be 2 panels. I just want to see it.
Yeah.
But other than that, though, it's book's phenomenal.
Yeah.
My favorite part's, like I said, the whole book.
My favorite part actually is the cat thing.
The cat thing's great.
The cat thing's my favorite part.
Yeah.
The cat's talking, and it's just like self-meaning's bad.
Yeah,
I'm like, looking great. But no, I think like my one negative is like the rest of the world because like
they leave into space immediately.
Yeah, I'm like,
we will see flashbacks.
I think that's what it is. I think
I kind of want to know what happened with Omar and
And Christine, yeah.
Because we do see Supermassive Black Hole say, are you going to be okay when I go down on Christine later? And he's like, dude, she's not my girlfriend. And I'm like, there's something going on.
That,
and then we have the scene where they're near Starshot.
Right. And then also you have they went along with it too quickly. That's my one thing. I was like, there's no, like, really argumentative.
Dude,
they were like,
but in the year 2032, it's like, dude, we're going to space. We're going to fuck aliens. And also, you can continue being science. Because she pitched it in a way that made sense. Yes, I know her friends definitely joined in on being porn stars way too quickly.
Yeah. There's also part of the comedy.
It's part of the comedy, but it works out well enough because she explains you can communicate with the aliens and build more of that. You can find diseases. You can do plants. You can go to space. I can get my Starshot launched into space. Yeah. Like, it works out enough and she's convincing enough
for the
to
reading,
where
yeah.
she could have gotten them up into space. But the porn stuff seems like a jump. But it's funny, and it's obviously about porn.
Yeah, and that's the whole joke about
all of them are good-looking enough to where they probably like porn anyway.
Yeah, and that's the whole joke about it. Like, sex. This is like a porn parody about porn parodies.
Dude, you know that... Oh, okay, so there was a porno that came out a couple years ago, and it was like the first porn in Zero Gravity. It's basically this.
Yeah.
I forget who it was in that porn.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah, I don't know, but it was... when I read the headline, it came up and it was like, first porn shot in Zero Gravity, used space shuttle. I was like, this is ridiculous. And it's basically, what if that article was a comic book?
Yeah, and that's the whole thing. I think this entire thing, it's just a cool kind of, like, comedy to do. So...
Yeah, because I follow Sarah Beatty on Twitter or Instagram or something, and she's been talking about this book for, like, a year or so.
Yeah.
Saying, oh, man, I'm doing a book. I can't really talk about it. Hush, hush. But it's going to be great, and I'm working with Tim Steele, and I was like, that's awesome. Totally forgot about it. Then I read this book, and then I looked at the creative team, and I was like, oh, this is the book! And dude, oh my god.
That's great. So,
such a good book.
5 out of 5?
5 out of 5. 5. Dude, all this week's been 5 out of 5.
Come back, that's why.
Yeah.
Save the best when I came back. So we can wrap it up for this week's episode. As always, guys, thanks for listening. You can head over to our website, AndrewsComics.com, to check out this week's previews and new releases. Follow us on Instagram at Andrews_comics and Twitter at Andrews Comics for up-to-date news. If you listen to us on Apple Pods, don't forget to rate and review us. And if you're listening on any other device or app, don't forget to share. And as always, support your local comic shop and have a good one.
Woohoo!
I'm glad we filled this episode with porn.
This episode was all porn.